Hi everyone, this is Carmen Miksha
and Sophia Miksha,
your hosts of Seeds of Sunshine, a mother-daughter multi-generational podcast filled with laughter, wisdom, and advice. Sophia is a sophomore in high school in the IB program, a runner, a piano player, and a sister. I have a BA and MA degree in English and have published 2 poetry books and a tennis book, which you can find on Amazon or on my website, carmenmiksabooks.com. I am also a marathon runner and the broker CEO of Dynamic Real Estate, my own company. So if you're looking to buy or sell a home with me in the Sacramento or Bay Area regions, please visit my website, dynamicsacramentohomes.com. Thanks so much for joining us. We promise to sprinkle seeds of sunshine once a week to elevate your lives and dreams through better communication between generations. Vini Potestivo is an Emmy Award-winning media advisor who helps clients leverage their media exposure, find fame, and make an impact. Vini is the editor-in-chief of I Have a Podcast and is responsible for discovering and amplifying the voice of independent podcasters worldwide. As a network executive at MTV Networks from 1998 to 2007, Vini discovered talent and developed new ways to support their goals, pioneering the way brands and business owners could contribute to their public narrative by making them stars and producers of their own television series. Early hits include Punk'd, The Osbournes, TRL, Ace and Ocean, Wild and Out, and The Challenge. You can also listen to Vini dissect the creative process with some of the stars and creatives who helped launch his career, such as Mandy Moore, Danielle Fishel, Ananda Lewis, to name a few, on his award-winning I Have a Podcast audio experience, which is available everywhere you watch and listen to podcasts. Personal brands Vini has helped elevate through the use of original content include Mandy Moore, Ashton Kutcher, Jessica Simpson, Beyoncé Carter, Jerry Springer, Snoop Dogg, Ashley Simpson, and many more. Welcome to Seeds of Sunshine, Vini. I feel like I'm talking to a MTV star, a superstar. I can't tell you how honored I am.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. And you've mentioned some of my absolute favorite people on this planet who made my career and my life possible. That intro was very generous. Thank you. I have to say, shout out to Rod Asa and Christine Cowan, the people in our team who make us strong, who allow us to show up and be our own best version of ourselves. And I was lucky to get to find people to help me do that. But I love those. That's fun. Thank you so much for saying those names and bringing me back to the 90s and early 2000s of unscripted TV. What a journey it's been, right? How far we've come from sharing our story to owning our story. What a journey it's been for creators.
Absolutely, Vini. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was bragging to someone that I'm interviewing you, and they're like, well, is MTV even around anymore?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. The youth culture was around when I was at MTV. You know,
yes.
I sometimes look back and I say, you know, MTV changed and it's different and doesn't do what it used to do and blah, blah, blah. But that's not fair to put that on that channel or any network on TV, to be honest, because TV's, you know, we all know the numbers are on social media and digital media and streaming audio and podcasts. It's more competitive now for attention than ever. I was lucky to work at MTV when MTV turned 20, and I got to work with MTV when it was, you know, in its 20s. It kind of knew who it was. It grew into who it could be. It far exceeded any expectations, and it did it. It wasn't the cool kid, to be really honest. It was the student. It wasn't the teacher. And I can't thank enough people for letting me be in the rooms and in that building for 10 years. I was in that building for 10 years building the talent development department and finding ways to tap into people's unique skills. First it was Vinny, find new ways to work with talent and we can make them host. The talent could be artists or actors, and those people could be hosts or maybe in MTV movies. And when my boss and Sharon Osbourne sat down and came up with ultimately Real World with the Osbournes, which I think was like what the final tagline of the show was before we went into production. To see that, to take what MTV did was MTV created a genre of media, the music video. And in the 80s, the music video gets introduced. It's 3 to 4 minutes. And that's when the artist is going to be given to share their story. That's what they have ownership over.
Excellent. And I think
what MTV did in the late 90s was expand from 3 minutes to 30 minutes and gave those celebrities much longer period of time to be themselves. And that's what I think they did successful, was creating space for people to shine. That's what I learned how to do at that platform, because I saw them do it with me and with dozens, or if not hundreds, of the one percenter creators that still make impact on today's current economy and creative economy.
Amazing, Vinny. And before we dive more into this, I would like to say a quote and a joke, as we always have on our podcast. And the quote is about success. Albert Schweitzer said, "Success is not the key to happiness. Happiness is the key to success. If you love what you're doing, you will be successful."
Yeah, that is so true. When did he write that? Just recent, hundreds of years ago, or just recently? Like, how perfectly timed is that message? And it couldn't be truer. And I think if he wrote that 100 years ago or 200 years ago, the vision that man had is brilliant. I can say this. I'm the friend in the friend group where people are like, "Don't let Vinny take the picture, because he's never going to post it. He takes pictures and keeps it on the phone. Like, he's a photo hoarder. He doesn't share his videos." I love creating. I can make content. I make content for me all the time. My friends are the ones who are complaining about it. But like, I love editing and the act of creativity. I'm aware that the linear experience of what I can shoot and what I can record is different than the linear experience of when I need to publish and when the world needs to see it. So I've got my phone ready, and I record a ton of content just for me. So to your point about, if you're doing what drives you to happiness, if you're doing what makes you most fulfilled, success comes in that space. I completely agree. Wait, what's the joke? I'm so excited.
Okay, maybe you have the answer. It's a really cool one. Okay. So, how do celebrities stay cool?
I don't know. How do celebrities stay cool?
They have fans.
Well done. I like that a lot, actually. Yeah, you're right. By the way, you cannot have a celebrity if there is not a fandom. You cannot have a following if you are not a leader. Every leader needs a following. Every following needs a leader. And I love that. I love that joke and what it points out in the relationship between those two. This reminds me of two quotes that I like talking about. Maya Angelou says, "With creativity, the more you spend, the more you have." And Warren Buffett says, in regards to money, the more you spend, the less you have. So why do we expect linear success in content? Why do we need financial and creative success coming from the same pieces of content when in and of itself, those pieces, those materials don't function that way? And what I like to do in this market, in this creator market, where people can now create content on behalf of themselves or on behalf of their businesses, that they can invest in an intellectual property, they can invest in a conversation that they own. And I like helping make sure that they're effective and impactful. I like showing how you can win awards with content. And the reason why I like showing people how to win awards with content is because when you're an award-winning content creator, the door opens up for you differently. More doors open up for you. More people want to be in that shine. And also, in winning that award, it's generally speaking for the project, not for the producer or the person, that one single person. In fact, thank you speeches have 20, 50 people. I want to thank my mom. I got to thank God. I want to thank my cousins and my agent and all the people who truly made it happen. And Snoop Dogg gave my favorite thank you speech. Snoop Dogg, of course, I learned the weirdest things from the craziest celebrities. Snoop's thank you speech to himself is something I think people should listen to. It is an inspiring conversation between a man and himself, reminding reminding himself of all the hard work and sacrifice. He says, you know, I want to thank me for being me, for showing up when no one else showed up for me, for not quitting when everyone told me to quit, for not going on that vacation, for not going. I want to thank me for that. And I think of that as grace. You know, like if we're doing what we love doing, that's one thing. If we can fill the space with grace where other people also can be successful, I think that's the ability to make change. That's the ability to make impact.
I agree with you, Vinny. And speaking of that, what are three things anyone can do to increase their chances of getting discovered and maybe getting these awards?
Yeah, well, sure. So discovery is, so let's talk about discovery in 2023, right? Because discovery in 1999, it was, hey, you were at an NSYNC concert and I got to tap you on the shoulder because I'm the casting director. We want to come to MTV, like, have an audition and see if you can be. I, the casting director, was what made it the right time, right place. And now anywhere where you're standing in 2022, 2023, whenever you're listening to this, this is the right time. You have control over the right time, right place. In fact, if I wanted to meet 1,000 people and get them into the MTV studios now, what I wouldn't do is run around New York trying to meet 1,000 people. What I would do is stand still on 45th and Broadway, and I would literally, because I know where I need to be, and I would meet the people as they're coming to me. I would stand and be the source so that as these stories are flying by me, I'm able to grab them. So I like pointing that out because discoverability used to be increased visibility and you'll get discovered. And I don't think that's quite like the strategy anymore. I think it's visibility to the power of sharing. If you can be visible and then someone shares it, if a songwriter writes a song on a TV show that people go out and buy and share and sell and talk on social media about it, that's sharing, you know? And these are things that we can be doing as business owners. I'm not even just like saying celebrities and creatives. As business owners, we can be better at getting shared. As business owners, our website is something people share, our credit cards, our experiences, merch. There's a big reason why celebrities write their name on hat because people wear hats and people wear hats to go grocery shopping. And what happens when two people from the same fandom end up being in the same grocery store is an explosion of energy that only would have happened because of merch. And that silly $20 hat allowed this moment of connection and opportunity. This t-shirt that has my name on it, as some of us might cringe and roll our eyes back, ugh. Like, am I worthy of having a t-shirt? It's not about you. It's not your shirt. You know, first off, get over that. It's not your shirt. And stop making decisions for people who want to support you. Allow them to make the decision themselves. It's powerful. It's powerful, especially as we're going back to live events. I use this analogy a lot about like going to a concert and, you know, wearing, you know, whether it's my favorite sport team or the college that I went to. These shared experiences are things that we're looking for in life. This is the number one way for me that I'm making contact is through shared experiences. So I actually have to go out of my way to make that experience happen. Or I talk a lot about MTV like I did. Here's my strategy. I talk a lot about MTV like I just did at the top of this podcast because that could be our shared experience. Maybe we already saw thousands of hours of the same content and like, little do we know, we already got the same language and understandings and some social metrics that we can really talk about. Those shared experiences really matter. I love that. I'm a guest right now on your podcast. I love, love podcast guesting. This is like change. I spend 6 days a year recording my podcast. You know, I have a weekly podcast. In 2022, I had a weekly podcast as 10-minute episodes where they're inspiring. And what I'm doing in 2023 is I'll still have on Tuesdays my podcast where I'm hosting it and interviewing somebody else. But Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, 4 days a week, I'll get to have a guest co-host interview me where I'm the guest on my own podcast. And I actually think that people will discover you and be more likely to take the leap to your podcast as a result of how you're interviewing me. They if they're following me, they trust me, they know me, they like me. If you bring out a great version, a different version, a unique version of me, that's going to pique their interest and start looking at you. You know, my facts don't change My characters don't change, but that story changes based on the questions and the audience. And you have full control over the questions, and they are the audience. Me, I just get to show up. And as a guest, you know, I don't want to make it sound silly and light. As a guest, as if you were going to like your in-laws' house for holidays, you have to know what's going on. You have to know who works where and what's happening and have conversation points. I didn't show up with a bottle of wine or a dish. I'm sorry. But I show up with valuable information, and I make sure that I earn my seat at the table, and more so. And also, here's the funny part. I like leftovers. So like I'm actually coming here and I'm happy to share information, but I'm looking to leave this not just with a book-ended conversation where I got to share my experience. That's nice and wonderful. And I'm looking forward to the point in time where my podcast career, where that comes back to me. But right now, it's the people that matter most. I can show up, and some people might not understand this, but I have tremendous anxiety when it comes to being on camera. By the way, I know way too much. So like, I had no imposter syndrome as a 20-year-old because I didn't know anything. Now I've seen way too. It was the act of Zoom. It was the pandemic that forced us to connect to each other this way, that allowed me to show up and not be nervous about my voice, because I was told my voice sounds a certain way. So I have to edit my voice out of everything when I used to send it into TV networks, or maybe my hands move too much. And I mean, for all the, if I were to take a checklist and say all the advice, good or bad, that I got, there was one piece of advice that I got one-to-one. So if I got 50 pieces of advice, 25 were unique and 25 were the same. And I refused to listen to the same 25 ones, which were people telling me to lean into being myself. I was like, no, that's not the answer, because I already am myself and I know that's not good enough. So I have to be a different version of me so that everyone likes me. And oh, thank gosh that I got out of that mindset, because one, I don't want to be the version of me that you want me to be. I want to be the version of me that innately you want me to be, but I don't want it to be your version. I want it to be our version, because we have similar goals. And part of me showing up here is like, you have complete control over this edit. You have complete control over this conversation. I'm not terrified to show up. I'm not afraid of podcasting or being interviewed. None of that weird TV kind of stuff that pops into my mind, which is like, you don't own it. And what if they Frankenbite it and turn it differently? And what if she says that she can't own it? She can't do this because her boss says that's why I showed up the way that I showed up, and specifically with you, Carmen, is because we get to create this, two people. And I'm learning from you, as, by the way, I've never had a podcast where there was a quote in a joke before. I love that as a format beat. And I talk in TV terms. That's a fun format beat. You could, I'm thinking of like, there's a guy here in the States called Steve Harvey, and he has the Steve Harvey Show, and he does this Q&A from the audience, and he has this monologue, and he has guests come on his podcast. He's got the 5-minute inspirational monologue as a podcast. He's got the Q&A with the audience as a separate podcast. Like, he's figured out how to take these pieces and frame them in a way that can be really supportive. And he's doing it in pre-purposement. He knows that it's either repurpose old content into new content or create new content while creating new content, so that you can, I call it pre-purpose, meaning you've identified how you want to advertise. You've identified who's going to be the person that's going to get you some of the eyeballs. You've proven that these bring you eyeballs in. So if it works, you got to keep doing it. And that's when you build yourself as the source and not the story. There's power and being the source, not the story. There's power in being Disney and not, I don't know, I don't want to say Rapunzel, but that's, sorry, Mandy, you know, but there's power in owning the story versus the characters. By the way, Rapunzel, it's an interesting, I don't want to go too far off on a tangent here, but Rapunzel is a character that Disney doesn't own. It's a, like most of the princesses that Disney doesn't own, but there's a vantage point, a point of view that Disney's put on that character that they own. And that's where being the source really matters.
Awesome, Vinny. And since you touched upon, you know, like pitching your stories and being in charge of your story, what is your advice on pitching one's story to mass media?
Oh, absolutely. So So two things. One is most people might feel like the way to get their podcast on TV is to have a TV show. Like they might think the best way to be on TV is to have a 30-minute show. And what I want to tell you is, what if you were a segment on someone else's show first, just to prove that the message connects with the audience? Like, you might fully believe and understand and love the message and stand behind the message, but if the audience isn't connecting with it, that's something that the network is taking a risk on. I like pointing this out. The Simpsons, they were a segment on the Tracy Ullman show in the 80s. They weren't real 30-minute show. In fact, because of data, they could tell that between the third and fourth act of the TV show, where most people would drop off, they saw after the break, you know, TV says, don't leave after the break. So the TV actually measures drop off. So like, and radio does too. So if you're dropping off and you're not staying on to the commercial break, it means two things. One, we lost your interest in the show. Two, more likely than not, you didn't watch the commercials, which are really important in TV. So there's a real strategy to that. But they saw that the Osbournes would be like the cartoon version of The Simpsons. They saw that The Simpsons resonated and held an audience. And after the Tracy Ullman show was no longer on air and Fox was looking to create an adult-themed cartoon, that was the one that came to mind because it had data to it. And it's really cool to look back at that moment because Simpsons have been a big part of American pop culture, and they've certainly been a big part of global pop culture as they predict certain things that are happening because they're listening, right? This is a man, as they're creating this, that is listening to the news and listening to our feedback and writing about it. So two things. One, the best way to reach media is think about, where can you fit in? Where can you stand in? What's already existing that you can be a segment, a repeat segment, a recurring segment? Maybe you then become a contributor. What are some of the ways you can earn their respect slowly with small pieces that you can get into it? And then the second part is, if you are looking for something longer, and this even goes back to creating short form content, it's the input dictates the output. If you're not creating content high quality, if you want your podcast clips to be on TV, they need to be in 4K. It's just how TV works now. If you and I, it's like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, or maybe you don't know this, but in New York, in Manhattan, there's a parade, and it's the Thanksgiving Parade. And on a specific channel, is it the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade? On other channels, it's the New York Parade or different, you know, pieces like that. It's the point of view that really matters most. So writing and creating content in 4K is going to allow you, and by the way, 4K cameras, I have paid just under $200, I think, for this camera on top of my computer, because that's 4K camera. My iMac doesn't have 4K camera on it. But if you don't have a $200 budget, or if you already have an iPhone, actually Apple just did something where you can now screen, it's not screen sharing, it's kind of like lens sharing. So I could actually be recording this Zoom from my phone camera without it going through my phone cell, but just using the camera part of my phone connected to my computer. So there's technology that's coming, you know, our way to help us with that. So some of it is, where can you fit in? And how can you be a source to those people? By the way, if you want to be on the Today Show or GMA, you watch the credits, you see who the producer is, and you reach out to them. And I can certainly help you with that stack and that level, by the way. But one of the things they're going to tell you is, what local news have you done? And the reason they want to know what local news is twofold. One, from the video perspective, to make sure that you can do live TV, because this is no errors on GMA and Today Show at that level of broadcast. And the others is, do you have the credits? Like, they go to IMDb and they look to see if you've been in other shows. Like, if I want legal advice on a television show, I might go to other shows that have had legal experts on them, and I can look at already who has a track record of that. This is why I like telling podcasters that to go get their credit on IMDb, the Internet Movie Database. This is the same place that bookers are looking for, news producers are looking for content. Podcasters can upload their podcast intellectual property. You can't listen to your podcast or watch it on IMDb yet, but you can get and give credit. The link backs, the data points that you create when you tell IMDb that you own a podcast, have created X amount of episodes, have had XYZ guests, have won 1, 2, 3 awards, have 15 different taglines about it. Maybe you have a large team. Maybe you have a small team and had a couple of volunteers help with artwork. And now you've got a place to give credit to people. Not only do you get to get credit, you get to give credit. That's powerful. And it's discovery. And it's changing how people find me on Google and on IMDb. If you like Mandy Moore and you go to her page to see what movie she's on and care to see what podcast she's been on, you'd see she was on mine. And that's a point of discovery that I have now because I took the time to take what my actions in real life were and digitize them, create a data track so that I can have the breadcrumbs, so I can get the credit of what I actually created. And that's one of the ways that I'm standing out. Is I'm simply, as a creator, I know that every show I've ever worked on, I get a credit on IMDb. If I didn't, then I would go in and you can register and you recommend that you get the credit and they approve it whether or not you did or didn't do that job. And so I know that it is important because that's where my old bosses and old clients used to look. They would say, who cast that show? And then they work down, they see I was a casting director and I want to cast like that. So this guy is going to be the person who can get us that. And I realized that about IMDb, how powerful that is. So if you're a lawyer, if you are a baker, an accountant, a minister, I mean, I can come up with 1,000 different job titles that traditionally wouldn't be on IMDb. And the reason I'm telling you to be on IMDb is because as a mass media executive, that's where I go to look for people who I know have a track record and could potentially be discovered to be larger network, you know, talent. It's a big opportunity to be out there. And this IMDb thing is big. And just this month, they updated the platform. So I actually have to go back because all of my episodes say self. You know, it's a weird thing. Actors do a film and then they do like 20 TV shows to promote it. So when you look at their resume on TV, they do 20-1 TV shows to film because of the promotion component, even though we really know them as film actors. IMDb just listed podcaster as a creative title. This is the biggest news of the year for me. This is Google. This is what I hear when I can now pronounce that I am a podcaster. That to me, I feel like Google is going to look at that as a meta tag. I feel like there's going to be a snippet that pops up now that says podcaster Vinny Podestivo, where now it's a unique data point. There's no blogger title on IMDb, and many of us are bloggers, right? So if podcasting is already getting this type of credit, I think that it's because of the value that these search platforms and discovery platforms are putting on the content we're creating because they know it's valuable. And this is cool. This is a different opportunity. This is what us podcasters are doing is very different than the influencers who've gone through the creator economy and have figured out how to get brand sponsorships. And by the way, those sponsorships that influencers get in this creator economy, we're also, you know, acceptable and qualified to put our name on the very same list that they put their names on. Should we want to be discovered? I have a list of over 50 creator platforms. If you're a podcaster and you're saying, I don't know how do I monetize? How do I get money? I like telling people to go to these platforms and put your name on the list. I don't have hundreds of thousands of followers. I make between $500 to $2,000 a month just from having my name on a few lists where people reach out to me and they say, hey, we're Art of Shaving. Would you like to shoot a couple of images for us on Instagram? And I don't look at that as an influencer assignment. I look at that as a creative obstacle where I know a brand is looking for content. I have a platform and I have a need. My need is for you to see me as a social audio expert or as a podcasting expert. So anything that I'm asked to do from any of these brands, I will always shoot it with a microphone. There will always be an element, a creative element of audio in it. Otherwise, I'm not getting my point across. And what I'm trying to show you is that I'm a podcaster that's getting paid as an influencer because that's how brands pay us. They just don't pay podcasters yet. You know why? the KPIs. Instagram, Facebook, they made it easy for brands to know the power that influencers have because there's metrics, there's analytics. So KPIs, the key performance indicators, are reach. Instagram tells you what the reach is. So the brand understands that. Us podcasters have a unique relationship with our audience. Some of us might even have 50 to 100 downloads per episode. And some influencers would go, 50 to 100. Yeah, 50 to 100 over 4 years. Imagine the loyalty that I have with my audience versus your 200,000 that you got a month ago on TikTok because you lucked out and or didn't luck out and really strategic and tried to go viral. And now all those people, you know, have access to you but don't know who you are and don't trust you. They see you, but they're not sharing you. This is what I like helping people do. I was thinking about, I'm always in my head sort of visualizing, you know, like tomorrow and what am I doing today and how is it really changing tomorrow? And I have this like this visual of like people wanting to reach their goals and I'm only 6'3". I can only be as tall as I am. My hand can only reach as high as it can go. If I have big goals, I'm going to need a big platform to reach them on because I need something to sustain when I reach it. You know, I'm reaching and grabbing. I can't reach and grab and go all the way back down to, I need a platform that supports me. And I realize like what I help people do is build that platform, you know, step by step, incrementally. I help them slowly accumulate the things that they need. Sometimes slowly, sometimes you got a lot and it's just like, you needed the one leg. You needed the media leg. But I realized I was doing all these things for TV, for people to get cast as housewives and hosts of shows and go on to be big celebrities. I was doing all of these little pieces for the network to say yes. And it's in these little pieces that I was giving them the credibility and authority and getting them past that line so that the network would buy into them. If a network can buy into you, then the audience buys into you. Why do I gotta get the network to buy into you? Cut the network out. And by the way, I don't want to... No offense to reality TV and the people who are working on it now. And I love them. They're my brothers and sisters and family members. I just don't want to be hired to cast people based on their dating status or their pregnancy status. Or like this is not because I think it's icky, because it's not. It's rewarding. I worked on a show where I had to find couples who got married, who agreed not to have children, but then one of them now wants to have a child. And you might think, oof. How difficult is that? Oh, I'm going to cry because I'm thinking about what happened. You want to know what the weirdest part about casting that show was? It was called Baby Borrowers. It aired in the UK. The hardest part about that show was when the couples that I was talking to were talking about it. And I'm very careful in the casting process. I'm journaling. I'm not reporting. I'm not trying to create a story. I'm just journaling a story here. The different, right? Because I don't want to change reality because that's what the show's about. But then 2 weeks later, they call me and they say, oh, I'm sorry, we can't do the show. I'm pregnant. And I'm like, pregnant! You did it! Well, not 2 weeks later, actually, by the way. If you weren't really, now that I'm really tired, it's 3 months later when you think that they're the couple that's going to do it. And then they didn't, you know, they took matters into their own hand. And I love that about us. Like, we shouldn't let other people fulfill our goals if we're capable of fulfilling them. I'm going to point that out, right? I'll say that again. Like, here I am trying to cast people based on building a family, and they went and had one. And my initial reaction was, I have to go find another family, and I have to spend all that money that it took me to find that person to go now and find a new person. And I thought, that this seems not fair because what I did was find a real couple who was really having this conversation. They weren't pretend having it, and that's why they didn't have a kid, and that's why I was able to get them on the show. They were legitimately having this conversation. I did what you asked me to do, and I went back to Lifetime. I tried not to say the network, but I went back to Lifetime, and I said, they got pregnant, and that's why they didn't do the show. You approved them, and production took a certain period of time. We can't point fingers anywhere, but they did the job that you wanted to do, and I did the job that you wanted me to do. So if you want me to go find more people, I'm going to need more money because – I already did the job. The production company would say, but we hired you to get us someone on the episode, and what we don't have is someone on the episode. And there's that humanity piece in casting that I step up to.
Let's leave with your information for our listeners, and I will also add that in the show notes. So how can they connect with you, Vinny?
Oh, I love that. Well, I'm very responsive on LinkedIn. So please reach out and say hi before you have to. Like, let's be friends before it's go time. I really appreciate that. Also, Everything that I've talked about is documented on vpe.tv/hub, H-U-B. It's my creator hub. I literally have hundreds of links and tactics and step-by-step guides as to how to be successful. This is information I make readily available. I hope people can be successful just by gaining access to it. If not, I put it out there so I can do something that they say not to do, so I can help you. I actually have set myself up to be able to help people, and it's the most rewarding part of my job.
Thank you, Vinny. Have a wonderful evening. This was amazing.
You too.
Bye. Bye. Seeds of Sunshine is a proud supporter of Sacramento Youth Center, and 50% of your donations are going directly to our local branch. To contribute and support our podcast, please use the Ko-fi app, which you can find in our show notes. It is greatly appreciated. Wishing you a great week full of sunshine. Thanks so much for listening, sharing, and reviewing our podcast wherever you listen to. And if you have some great wisdom and advice and wish to be a guest on Seeds of Sunshine, please message me on social media at Carmen Mixa, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And last but not least, remember that we will have a monthly drawing for cool prizes to reward our top listeners and supporters who share and review Seeds of Sunshine. Goodbye for now.